It is indeed a pleasure and honor to be chairman of this first meeting of the Atlanta Roundup. And at this point, I would like to introduce a marvelous lady that I had the pleasure of having dinner with tonight, and we talked. I've got to admit that I haven't had the opportunity to hear her speak, hear her story. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm going to ask if you would help me welcome from I was going to say Indianapolis. From Statesboro, Georgia, Ida C.
Thank you. Can you hear me? It doesn't matter where I'm from, and it doesn't really matter what my name is. I'm just here, that's all. And like your slogan, we're all in this together, and that's the way I feel about it. We're all just either a bunch of drunks, or we're so sick we got tied up with a bunch of drunks. Either way, it doesn't make any difference. Frankly, I'm sick as any of you, and more sick than most of you, because I'm both. I'm the drunk, plus I got tied up with a drunk. So you can't get much worse off than that, I guess. I would like to thank Glenn and the committee for having the faith and confidence in me that I don't have in myself and allowing me to share this weekend with you. Now, I'm not going to thank him for letting me share it up here at this podium. I'd rather be sharing it out there where you all are. And after tonight, I will be. And it'll be a big relief, frankly. Say, be honest, that's the truth. In fact, I didn't think I was going to get here when Glenn called and asked me. You know, I felt like, sure, I can do it. And as the time went on and got closer, I knew darn well I couldn't. And I'm not sure yet that I'm going to be able to, but I can start anyway. And CD told me that there wouldn't be anybody here tonight because it was Thursday night, and the first night there wouldn't be anybody here, and he lied again. But between his pushing and my doctor pulling, I'm here. And I brought my doctor with me in case I fall out up here. He's going to take care of me. I am Ida Collins, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'm also, hopefully, a recovering Al-Anon. As I told you in the beginning, you know, I need a lot of help and support. And that's what I'm looking for up here this weekend. And I know I'm going to get it. I've already seen a lot of people that I love. And I know all of you, whether you know me or not, are giving me your love and support. And that's what really we're here for, is to love and support each other. I usually, when I'm going to talk, which I have not done in quite a long time now, except a couple of times, I usually have a talk that I say at night, and I have a talk that, you know, I say the next day, and so on and so forth. And to be perfectly honest with you, that is not the case this time. I have not made one because I didn't have a thought in my head. I couldn't think of one thing to say, except I'm out and I'm an alcoholic. And I still don't know. But I asked God to help me say something that some suffering alcoholics in this audience tonight needed to hear. And I have enough faith in the God of my understanding today, whom I have grown to know through you in this program, that that's what will happen. Whatever it might be, it'll be something that somebody needs to hear. We are told to say and tell a little bit about what we were like and what happened now. Trying to find out and learn, really, who I am today. And sometimes the person that I see myself as today, I don't. I'm grateful that I'm an alcoholic. That's one thing I always try to say, that I'm grateful that I'm an alcoholic. And I am grateful for this reason. If I weren't an alcoholic, I wouldn't be privileged to be a part of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's a God-given program for those of us who are so sick and so confused that we would die had we not had a program such as this. So I'm grateful that I can be a part of this program and this fellowship. Grateful that I'm married to an alcoholic. Now, it took me a long time to feel that way, I can tell you for sure. But that entitled me to the program of Al-Anon, and that's the way I really got here. And I hope I'll be able to tell you a little bit about my illness from both sides of the coin, so to speak. But it took me a long time to be grateful to be married to an alcoholic. Now, I should have known better than to drink. And you know, that doesn't mean a thing in the world. A lot of people I've heard say, you know, God, how can he drink after what he's lived through, what he's seen, or, you know, so on and so forth by reason of having lived in alcoholism. And if this were not a disease, that might apply, you know. But I'm firmly convinced that this is a disease. But I had grown up in an alcoholic home. I hated what it did to people. I did alcoholism, as I know it today. But I knew what it did to the people I loved, and I didn't like it. I want to say here and now, too, that my emotional problems are not as a result, necessarily, of my alcoholism. I had a lot of problems, a lot of character defects before I ever took my first drink. And they began to manifest themselves early in my childhood, as far back as I can remember. I began the manipulation back as a child. I know that today. I had a lot of denial. I had a lot of self-pity. I had all of the things, the negative feelings, that make us feel set apart and different. I say quite often that AA is the place where the misfit fit. Now, you may not like that, but concerned, that's what applies to me. I was a misfit. And now I fit as well as I can ever fit any place. I still sometimes suffer from feeling different and set apart and lonely in a crowded room. But I know that this is a place where I fit the best. But I had these feelings as a child. I used a lot of daydreaming as my escape before I ever found the drink. And as I said, I saw a lot of damage to the home as a result of drinking before I ever began to drink. And I hated it, and I never was going to drink. But you know, it held some sort of fascination for me, even in the beginning. And with all of the trouble that it caused, it held some sort of perverse attraction that I can't explain, but that you all who are alcoholics probably know. And I wasn't going to drink. If I ever had a drink, I loved it. And it did something wonderful for me. It helped me something different. And I liked that, and I wanted more. And I know today that I had one of the symptoms of alcoholism from that first drink, and that was that I wanted more. And I always drank from that drink only, wanting more. Now, I drank a long time not having any so-called problems that were apparent anyway from my drinking, but I always wanted more than I drank, and I drank from the very beginning with a conscious effort to control it. And to me today, this is a symptom of alcoholism. I did not get drunk the first drink I ever had. But I'll tell you what I did do. I got drunk the first opportunity I had. And so that tells me a lot right there. The first drink I ever had was at home with my parents, and I wouldn't have dared gotten drunk. But the first time that I was ever away from home, which was in my teens, that I had an opportunity to drink, I got drunk, I got sick, I threw up, I had a blackout, and I had a horrible hangover the next day. And You know, I should never have taken another drink. You know the story that we all know. That didn't make that kind of an impression. But I got away with it because I was away from home. But from that day on, I always looked forward to the times I could drink and the opportunities to do so. I did not drink much or very often while I was in high school. And the times that I did was usually at home whenever I had an opportunity. Now, I remember stealing it at home. When my mother and father would be drinking, and I'd know where it was, and if they had enough to drink that I thought they wouldn't notice me or I wouldn't get caught, I'd go in and steal it and drink. And I didn't do that very often because I didn't have that many opportunities. I swore I would never marry anybody that drank. You know, I had a lot of resolutions and a lot of things I wasn't going to do. And Sidney and I met when we were seniors in high school, or when he was a senior in high school. I'm a little bit younger. Now, he was all the things, too, that I said I wasn't ever going to have in a man. I wasn't ever going with anybody that drank. I wasn't ever going with anybody that wasn't, you know, a lot of things I wasn't going to do. Famous last words, well, he was all of those things. He drank, he drove fast, he went with girls that I thought were bad girls. I just wasn't going to have anything to do with him. And I like the bottle, you know. I have these compulsions. And when I saw him and we had the first date, you know, I was gone. And I tried every way in the world not to guy. Now, he says his was, you know, love right away. Mine wasn't. But it was some kind of real strong attraction. Maybe it was lust or whatever you might want to call it. But it was there. You know, he could touch me and I'd get hot all over. Kind of, you know, just this glow. Like a drink, you know. I could kind of compare him with the drink. Very well. Kind of all those resolutions went out the window about who I was going to date and what kind of guy. Now, we did a lot of fighting because, as I told you, I had started the trying to control and manipulate people back early. Well, I had been able to do that with a lot of the guys. And I prided myself on, you know, being able to control it and keep the upper hand and tell them what they could do and what they couldn't do when they were with me. Well, see, he wouldn't play that kind of game. You know, he was used to the same thing, I think, with the girls. So we clashed from the beginning. But we could not stay away from each other either. We made up, we broke up, he moved away. I got in guilt. You know, I look back and I think about, what would my life have been like had I gotten, you know, had I really married some of those guys that would have been willing to marry me? And what would theirs have been like? Pity them. But anyway, as we've decided in these past few years, we deserve each other. Because everybody told us we shouldn't get married. His folks said we shouldn't. They didn't like me. I was a country girl and not good enough for him. And my folks said I shouldn't marry him. He was wild. He was irresponsible. He was no good. You know, he was sorry. I reminded him that lots later on. But they told me I shouldn't marry him, and I really knew I shouldn't. But it wasn't popular to live together then like it is now. We might have tried that. I would like to have, I think. But we did get married after about 5 years of fighting and breaking up and making up. And after we were married, now, I had been able to more or less follow through with one of the resolutions I made, and that was not to drink when I was dating. Now, I learned something early on that should have been a real key to me had I really had any knowledge. It would have, maybe, but I learned that I was not predictable when I drank. I could never predict my behavior, and I wasn't in control. Consequently, one of the resolutions I had made was not to drink when I dated, and I'd been pretty well able to keep that one. But after he and I were married, then I felt like, you know, woman, and it's okay for me to drink. And we began to drink together. And there again began a period of controlled drinking after this marriage. But I felt like it was okay to drink now that I was married. And I had this man who was supposed to look after me and take care of me and make me happy. You know, and all these things that a husband was supposed to do. And it would be okay. And we didn't have a lot of problems with drinking in the beginning of our marriage. We had several years there that the marriage was real good. We were very much in love. We are today. Even though there was a period of time that we felt that we had destroyed it. But we did love each other a lot. Now, there were a few incidents that I see now that were very serious and could have been much more so. And they were as a direct result of drinking. But, you know, we just overlooked that and didn't really think too much about it being, as you know, drinking as being a problem. But we had some good years, although later on I couldn't remember any of the good times. I forgot about all those. And we went through. He went, finished up in law school. We went into the service. He did. I followed him around. We had two children. And he came out of the service. We went back in civilian life. And the drinking was still not a problem as we saw it. But it was stepping up all the time. I can see, looking back now, the progression of the illness that I couldn't see at that time. But when I went back into civilian life now, I see a definite change in the drinking pattern. Whereas we had been drinking on occasions a lot for these years in the early marriage, now we began to create occasions to drink. And all of you can probably see this in your own drinking pattern. Remember, when you begin to create situations and occasions to drink rather than just drinking when the occasion arose. So it was picking up, and it was growing, and it was getting a little more and a little more. Now, having grown up in this alcoholic home and having all these feelings about drinking that I had, this bothered me a lot. I worried a lot about it. We talked some about it. And I had a lot of guilt about it. But I still kept drinking. And I was doing what we all do. More and more, I was justifying and coming up with all these reasons that it was okay. But we talked about it, and as I said, we still didn't do anything about it. We didn't stop the drinking, nor did we cut down on it. We just began to think of more and more reasons to justify it. We went back into the service again, and the drinking, I think, in this period of time, as I see it now, really, really got worse. And I got more and more dependent on it. I became more and more dependent as time went on. When he went overseas after this second tour in the service, during the second tour in the service, actually, and I was left. Now, I want to tell you here now, like I said in the beginning, my character defects and emotional problems and so forth did not begin with my drinking. Now, I had never been really, I had never accepted any responsibilities. And he went overseas, and I was left with two children and expecting a third one. And I was scared to death. I had been dependent on him to do all the things, make all the decisions. And now he was leaving me, and I had to make my own decisions, and I had to try to be a responsible mother. And I was not equipped to do it. I was not able to do it. This was a very frightening period of time for me. And I went through this period of time with very little drinking. But I was very miserable. And I see now that you know, I was going through the things that all of us alcoholics go through when we don't have any program to live by. And we need to drink, and we can't drink, or won't drink for some reason or other. I was miserable. I was afraid. I just existed. And I was glad when he got home, and then I could have my excuse to start drinking again. See, I've used him for my excuse for drinking for many, many years. And there's no better excuse in the world, you know, than a husband to drink. Unless you're a man and it's a wife. But when he got back, you know, this was perfectly acceptable for us to start back drinking again, which we did right off the bat. Now, the drinking pattern had changed considerably for both of us. His was a very obvious change to me. Now, I didn't see mine that much, or I didn't acknowledge it and admit it. But he was a drunk now. And boy, now that began to cause some problems. He was getting up in the morning drinking. He was a different person. It was like I'd been married to about three different people during this, you know, during my lifetime. And he came back a full-fledged drunk. We began to have all kinds of problems. Whereas we hadn't had any really significant problems in the beginning, we began now to have all kinds of problems. A lot of fussing, a lot of fighting, a lot of accusations. I was drinking with him, and my drinking was out of control now. I'd go out and you know, with a definite intention not to take but one or two drinks, and I'd end up drunk. This was very, very baffling to me. I was very confused about what was going on. I had blackouts at this period of time, and I didn't know what a blackout was. But I began having blackouts. I began trying to talk to him about it then. I told you, you know, that when I married him, I expected him to be responsible for me, and ever since the word. Well, I kept telling him, you know, he had to stop drinking so I wouldn't drink, and he wouldn't stop. So he was causing all of this. And I began to let him know it, that he was destroying me, he was destroying the home, he was destroying the family. So we had a lot of trouble. Eventually things got so bad in our home that I felt, well, you know, I've got to get away from him. If I get away from him, I won't need to drink, because he's causing it all. And I want to say right here and now that for those of you who might be here and be new in the program or wondering about whether or not you're an alcoholic and so on and so forth, that all of the things that I felt that caused me to drink, I know now, had nothing to do with my drinking. Also, one of the things that I felt definitely was if C.D. would stop drinking, it would, then all of the problems would be eliminated. And that ain't so. Not by any stretch of the imagination. But I felt like if he would stop drinking, everything would be okay, and I wouldn't need to drink. Well, since he wouldn't, and he was causing all these problems, I decided that if I could get away from him, I'd be okay. So I did leave him, and I did divorce him. And I was going to get my life in order, and then raise my children in the proper atmosphere and so forth. And I moved out of Statesboro, where we live today. I'm from Statesboro, then. But I moved to Statesboro, and that's really how why we're in that town today. And tried not to drink for a while. I got settled into a house, and I was going to get a job and so forth. Well, things got worse and worse and worse because C.D. was now in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm in Statesboro, Georgia. And he's still causing me to drink. I just couldn't get away from this bad influence, you know. Now I'm going to the liquor store and buying it. He's causing me to get worse and worse. And with him in Birmingham and me in Statesboro. I'm going to the liquor store buying my liquor. I'm taking my children and loading them up in the car with them wanting to stay at home and saying, Mama, why we're going to the liquor store? And I say, we're going over to see Papa because he lives in Metter when the liquor store was between Statesboro and Metter. So we were going over to see Papa and, but when we get to the liquor store, which was about halfway between, I'd have to stop, and by the time I stopped and got the bottle, it was usually too late to go see Papa. And so we'd turn around and go back home. And this was the kind of pattern that I had developed by this time. And still the denial, which is so much a part of our illness. We were divorced for about a year, and things got worse with me with my drinking. I still didn't know anything about alcoholism, except I knew that C.D. was a sorry drunk. And if that was alcoholism, you know, I sure didn't have it, because I wasn't like him. But my problems hadn't stopped when I got rid of him. I did know that. But the reason they hadn't is because he wouldn't leave me alone. He was still calling. And finally he would call and he would come. And finally he came and he just stayed. You know, he wouldn't leave. Not only did he come, but he brought his daddy. And they both talked. Sadie said he was never going to drink again. And, you know, everything was going to be beautiful and rosy if we just could get back together. And his daddy told me, after they'd talked and tried to convince me, you know, how crazy I was for not wanting this fine, upstanding man back, and they hadn't convinced me, his daddy finally got around to the offering me money. And money was very important to me at this time. It was so important until I was willing to take this man back that I hated and despised if he'd give me enough money. Of course, I won't tell you all here now, he didn't give me enough. I swear he never gave it to me. He just promised it. See, he really inherited some of those tendencies. No, I loved his father very much. He was as fine a person as I've ever known. But he said, you know, I'll buy you a house, I'll do this, I'll do that. You really need to get back together for these children. Well, I needed somebody. I knew that. Because I couldn't support these children. And you know, I thought that there were a lot of fellas out there that would just be waiting for me when I got rid of CD. But they hadn't come along. I hadn't seen the first one of them. So he was the only thing that had, you know, really been available. So I finally agreed. You know, I was a martyr. I will take you back. Now I don't have any use for you, and you're a sorry no good drunk. But I'll take you back just for the children's sake. Now, you know, that's sick, isn't it? That is real sick. I thought it was being big, you know, but that's sick. Well, you know, the marriage wasn't a blasted, and plus we didn't know anything about alcoholism, plus we had never heard of AA. So you know what the story on that was. Well, the drinking started again. We both started drinking again. Things got worse. We began to play the games that two alcoholics in a home can play. We did all the threatening, all the accusing, everything that two alcoholics that are still drinking and sick can do. We literally destroyed the relationship. What had not been destroyed before, the divorce, was now destroyed after this second marriage. He would go off and buy the liquor, and I'd wait for him to bring it, and it didn't make any difference what kind he brought home. If I wasn't with him, whatever he brought home, I drank. I began to steal his liquor and hide it and lie to him so I'd have some to drink. I'd get in that car and go and take the children when we needed to be at home asleep so I could go to work and they could go to school, just so I'd be with the liquor when he got it, because I didn't want him to buy it, drink it all up before he got home, because I needed it. We began to accuse each other of things that we had never thought about doing or never thought about each other doing and knew that we weren't doing a lot of it, but we accused each other. We did all of the sick things that two people can do. And it got bad enough, thank God, that eventually City decided that he needed help and he went off the creek. Now, there were a lot of things that went on during this time that I'm not telling up here, and it wouldn't be appropriate to tell, even if I had the time to tell it. Some of the things are not any of your business, tell you the truth. You probably know about what they are, but I'm not going to tell you. But he went off with a little bit about alcoholism. Now, I felt real sorry for myself because of him, and I felt that I had deserved a lot better than I got, and I was entitled to a lot more than I had gotten. And I used to lay and think about all these wonderful things I could have had or these wonderful people I might have had. And I felt sorry for myself. You know, I haven't gotten over all that. I told y'all I was sick, didn't I? Y'all feel sorry for me? Oh, I'm just kidding. But anyway, I felt real sorry for me, and I was real, felt like I had really been deprived and that God was picking on me by giving me this man. And I'd like to say here now, in case I forget it, that I am very grateful, because if I hadn't had this man, I'd be dead. Because I never would have looked for help, and I never would have gone off the treatment, and I never would have been able to walk into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous on my own. I'm convinced of that. God was doing for me then what I could not do for myself, and he is today. But he went off the treatment, he came back, he told me what he had learned, and I resented it when he went off, and I want to tell you, for any of you who are here that are living with an alcoholic, and if he or she goes off the treatment, and you feel like I did, don't beat yourself to death about it, but get in there and do something about it. And I'll tell you some of the things that we can do. And I told you I wanted to talk about both aspects of my illness, and a lot of the feelings that I have, I know that I was sicker more from living with other people's alcoholism than I was my own. The bitterness, the resentment, the anger that I had by reason of living with other people. Because I resented his being off in treatment. I was at home trying to look after three children, trying to drink, trying to hold down a job, trying to maintain a home, and I knew I was crazy. Now, I knew I was crazy as I could be, and I knew also that CD had caused it. And here he was up here in this beautiful place with these good-looking women and this pretty swimming pool, you know, calling it treatment. Now, whatever kind of treatment it was, it sure was, I was eating up on the inside about it, and I hated him. I thought, I'm the one that needs to be off on a vacation. And that's what he was off on about. And if you feel that way, which I see a lot of people who do, and I know he's a sorry son of a bitch, that he's off down here living it up and having a good time, but he may get sober. And if he does, you've already put up with all the suffering connected with the illness and all the damage that has been caused by it, and you want to reap some of the benefits. So get yourself down here and see if you can't get better, too. And hold on to him if he gets sober, just in case, you know. Well, that's about the way it is, too, with us. My God, if we put up with these drunks while they're drinking, if they get sober, we're entitled to whatever benefits they are. We've earned them. But I didn't think there were going to be any benefits, to tell you the truth. So when they asked me to go up there to see him, I said, no way. I'm not going up there for all those people to tell me what my wife's duty is. And this poor, suffering alcoholic, what he needs is love and understanding and all that crap. And I said I wasn't going to say crap because I kept telling CD he got to quit saying crap. Another bad habit he's put on me. But I wasn't going to go up there. And there again, his mama paid a note at the bank if I would go. So I went, unwillingly, but I went. And he came back, and I had told him, he said, don't even come back down here. That's what I told him. He was up here in Atlanta. And I said, I hope you stay sober, but don't come back to state for. I want you to get out of my life. See, and I couldn't get rid of him, because his daddy paid me to take him back. And I didn't know what to do with him. I'd moved away from him, and I told him to stay away. He doesn't ever give up. He still doesn't ever give up. When he wants something, or wants to do something, you just forget it. He's going to do it if there's any way. So I said, don't come back. Well, he did, of course. And I said, you're not coming back in this house. So he stayed up in a little motel and visited. But, we say this is a program of attraction. And that's what it is. Now, he had not really been introduced to the program. It had been recommended to him. But he had been introduced to the way of life that our program tells us about and helps us to follow. Because in that treatment center, he had learned some things that we didn't know before. He had learned about a little bit about alcoholism. He had done an inventory, and he had changed, and I was able to see this. And this attracted me. I didn't understand it, but it attracted me. And he did stay sober. He did eventually move back into the house. And as had been recommended to him that he get into AA, we eventually did. Now that's kind of another story the way we did, but there wasn't any in-state for it at that time. There was a group started a few months after he got back, and we did start going. Now, I told you in the beginning that I'm in Al-Anon now. Well, I'm a retread in Al-Anon. I started out in Al-Anon and going to open AA meetings and listening to the speakers. And you know, I want to tell you that in the beginning, none of it made any sense. And the thing that really attracted me at that time was the fellowship and the peace. That's all I understood. And it was all I was capable of understanding. But we began going, and I went from Al-Anon, and I stayed in Al-Anon for 2 years. Now, that's how sick I was, before I could even look at my drink. And I could see it as any way related to alcoholism. And when I did, and when I decided that I needed to come into AA, T.D. and I sat down and talked about it. And, of course, I want to tell you this. When I first told him, I said, I'm coming into AA. See, we never had talked much about my drinking. We talked so much about his. And I'd done so much of mine when he, you know, was zonked out entirely and lied. And she just said, I was the best con artist and best deceit of anybody I've ever known, see. And I had him believing that, you know, I drank occasionally with him. And that was all. And he was convinced of this. And he took all the blame and responsibility. So we never had really talked much about my drinking. We just talked a lot about his. And so when I told him I was coming in AA, the first thing he says, I'll be damned if that's so. And the second was going to be a drunk. See, I was his property. And no wife of his was going to be a drunk. Well, to make a long story short, I did come in, and we have tried to recover in this program together. Talk just a little bit about that, since all of my time has been taken talking about the drinking. When we first started in this program, as I told you earlier, the relationship had been completely destroyed. Even though we, after a period of time, we still were not a loving, caring couple. I still had a lot of the bitterness, a lot of the resentment. I still put a lot of blame on him and made it very hard for him. It took us a long time to begin to really repair the damages that we had done. Now, we had not done a lot of fighting physically. He had never hit me. He had, I'd killed him. But I had hit him a few times. But it wasn't my fault. It's because he just drove me to it. But we had a lot of unforgivable stuff between us. And through this program, we have been able to repair that marriage. Not only have we been able to repair it, but it's a better marriage than it was in the beginning. And I'm very grateful for a lot of the things that happened, because the things that happened are the things that helped us realize the things that we needed to do in order to have a better marriage and a better relationship. You know, they just don't happen because two people get married and love each other. It's something we have to work on, and that's what I found in this program. In trying to follow the steps of the program, to some degree, you know, at least, day by day, it helped me to become a different person. I began to see me as I was, and I began to work on me. And the marriage began to get better. Whereas I'd always blamed him for everything bad, I began to accept some of the responsibility for it. And know that really and truly, the things that we were putting a lot of blame on each other for were just symptoms of the illness. This helped me to be able to do some forgiving, and it helped him too, to realize that a lot of the things that we said and did, those unforgivable things, were the mere symptoms of the illness. And I hope we can all remember that, because that's really what it takes for us to be able to start over And this is a new life. It is a starting over. For those of you who may have a marriage that's in that kind of trouble, think of it as getting married, you know, when you get sober, so that you can hopefully keep as much of those painful past memories in the past as possible. It's not too bad to use the past, and, you know, to remember it to some extent, enough to use it to keep from making the same mistake. But God help us if we keep living in it. Because we can stay just as sick without drinking as we were during the drinking. And I'm here to tell you, and I'm a perfect example of how it can be without drinking when we haven't done anything except leave off the drink. We're in a dangerous state. A very dangerous state. Not drinking and yet not growing or changing can be disaster for us. Absolute disaster. Consequently, I know that I have to have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous continuously. I have to have you people who are my kind of people with whom I sit to help remind me of where I've been and what I've been and where I don't want to go back to. Now, I'm not a good example of a person who lives the program very well because I have a lot of slips. I have a lot of mental slips, a lot of emotional slips, and I do a lot of the things that I don't want to do. I get critical of people. I get a lot of self-pity. I get, you know, all of the symptoms that I had before, all of these emotional things, character defects I get that I had before at times. But I know what it takes to change this. I know that this program, if I use it properly, will keep me getting better and will keep me healthy. When I say healthy, I mean healthy mentally and emotionally. Because this is what gets us back to the bottom. And I've had times, I've heard a lot of people say that they've never had the desire to have a drink. Now, I've had a lot of desires not to feel like I did. I don't know whether I really wanted a drink, but I wanted to feel differently badly enough that had the drink been right there at my fingertips, I know I would have picked it up. Consequently, we don't keep liquor in our house. Now, the last time I got drunk, I had hidden some that C.D. brought home. Now, my sobriety date is July 21st, 1962. And he's been sober several years longer than that. And the last time I drank, he had brought some home that he had taken from a guy on a 12-step call, and I hid it. And I think I still had some reservations, you know. I know I'm an alcoholic, but, you know, maybe I can still drink a little bit before such and such happens to me. The fact that I've never been in jail and I've never been to a treatment facility of any type. I've never had a DUI, I should have, but I just didn't get one. But those things, you know, don't have a thing in the world to do with my alcoholism. The fact that I'm an alcoholic. But I still had some reservations. Maybe I can drink, you know. I think I must have. I was not conscious of that, but anyway, I did drink because it was in the house. It was right there in one of those moments of insanity, which I have frequently, and I drank. So we don't keep it in the house. We don't keep it in our house. So I'm very grateful for the fact that I have done a little bit of growing. I have found a group of people who help keep me reminded of my illness, who keep me reminded of how serious my illness is. I'm grateful for a husband who is supportive. He doesn't try to run my program. I mean, not all the time. I'll lie if I don't watch it. There are a lot of advantages to both of us being alcoholics. There's some disadvantages, yes. But there are a lot of advantages. And the fact that we can recognize things in each other a lot of times. And sometimes we'll listen to each other when we're reminded of some things. But there are a lot of advantages in many ways. We're in the program together. We share it together. We go places together all the time. We thoroughly enjoy the things that go with being sober. We thoroughly enjoy going to everywhere we are, every meeting. I enjoy it. Now, things like this are like medicine to me. It's part of my prescription for staying sober. Now, I wasn't going to come up here this time because I you know, cause I was going to talk. We were planning to come, but then after I had decided to talk, but this is not really an official meeting of the Roundup anyway, is it? So if I make a bomb, that's okay. But I wasn't going to come, except for the fact that my doctor said, you know, this is part of your prescription, you need to go. So people do remind me of the things I need and the things I need to do. One of the greatest benefits of sobriety is the understanding and relationship that I have today of God. The God of my understanding today is a very loving God. He's a very caring, real God to me. Now, the God of my understanding before I got to this program was a very punishing God that I was very fearful of all the time. I walked in fear. I prayed without faith. I prayed just for things and with words. And you have taught me what it means to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Now I turn it over and I take it back. But I've had the experience of turning it over and seeing the wonderful result of letting go. The little slogans and things that we see on the walls that I thought in the beginning were so silly and meaningless have a great deal of meaning to me. And that let go, let God is one of the most meaningful ones. Because I've experienced in a time of deep trouble and in a period of crisis what it can mean to turn it over to God and say, not my will, but your will. I do this in big things, and I try to do it in little things. And like I say, I don't always do it. When I don't, I get in real trouble, and I've been in some trouble recently by reason of, you know, trying to do things my way or not having enough faith to really turn my whole life over to the care of the God of my understanding today. But those times when I have, it has been a wonderful spiritual experience. And the spiritual growth that I have had as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is beyond the words that I have to express. I'm very grateful for that. I could not have found it anyplace else because I had tried the other places and I didn't understand it enough and it didn't seem to fit me and I was always different. Always different. But in you and through you, I could understand it and understand the meaning of it and I could accept it. And that has been the biggest and the most wonderful thing that sobriety has given to me. It didn't eliminate all the problems like I had hoped in the beginning, but it certainly taught me how to deal with them and where the answers were. I have to look a long time for those answers today. Many times I have to look long and hard, and I have to get to another point of desperation, just like I did in my drinking, just like I did in my marriage relationship, and just like I did in all other situations in my life. I have to get to such a point of desperation to be willing to do the things that I know to do. And I struggle, and I agonize, and I hurt before I'll do the things that I know that I should do. But the fact that I do know what to do, and that I have you there telling me, supporting me, and loving me in spite of, this is one of the great benefits of sobriety also. It's the love that I have found. I could not accept love nor get it for such a long time. I had many resentments toward many people. Anybody that was happy, I hated. I wouldn't let you know I didn't like you and that I hated you, but I did. I envied you. And I always felt less than. And through this program, I don't feel less than. I feel a part of. And I know you love me warts and all. And that's the kind of love that outsiders don't understand. That's the kind of love that people who are not privileged to be alcoholic or married to them or living with them or in some sort of having some kind of relationship with them, emotion involved in some way, those people don't have the privilege. So we are the privileged few. I believe it. And if you've been here a long time, I think you do. And if you're new here, I think you will believe it as you stay here for a while. So if you're new in the program, or if you're here wondering if you belong in the program, I hope that maybe something I've said will help you to make some decisions that can give you some of the things that Petey and I have found through this program and through you. And I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for the husband that I have today. And we've gone through some adjustments when he retired. You know, life is a series of adjustments. And the good Lord helps us to learn how to adjust to the new situations in various and sundry ways. And he's given me some things recently that I didn't want. And I figured he didn't know really what he was doing. And I'm not sure he does yet. I keep telling him and reminding him that he might not know. But he's given me some things that I hope are going to be another blessing to me. And that I'm going to grow some as a result of. I know there's some reason now. I've learned that. And I've learned that kind of faith in this program. That there's some reason for the things and situations that we don't like and wouldn't choose to have. There's a purpose and a reason. And when it's the time and the place, then I'll know what that purpose is. And until that time comes, I hope and pray for the strength to turn my will over to the care of the God, the loving God that I know today. And to be patient and accept the things I can't change the things I can, and knowing that in the end, it's going to all work out just like it's supposed to be. And for that, I'm grateful. Thank you.